We're going to be continuing with alpha reactions today, and I think I indicated that I wanted to cover the Claisen condensation today, which is very much like the aldol condensation in certain ways, but it does involve esters instead of aldehydes or ketones. So first, if we want to make an enolate, let's talk about an appropriate base to use to deprotonate that alpha position. So let me throw this out there. Would sodium hydroxide be an appropriate reagent to make the enolate? Some of you are already like, why not? Yes, so if we had hydroxide, the conjugated hydroxide has a pKa of 16. What's the pKa of this compound? Davis, what is the pKa of this compound? Neutron. Oh, but you all have been studiously studying those alpha protons because your exam that's a week from today, is certainly going to cover the acidity of those alpha protons. So, again, what is the acidity of this alpha proton? Above 20 or below 20? Let's start there. It is above 20 because when you have that oxygen on the methoxy group that's donating electron density into the carbonyl, remember, that makes the carbonyl less tolerant of any negative charge that might be next to it. Less tolerant means it's harder for it to form, which means it's less acidic, the hydrogen that would be at that position. This has a pKa of 24. So pKa of 24 versus water 16 means that this would not be a very favorable process. Aside from the pKa problem, what would happen if you had extended exposure of an ester to sodium hydroxide? If it's not really acidic enough for hydroxide to deprotonate it, what else is hydroxide going to do to it? If this was the first or second week of the quarter and I showed you ester and hydroxide, what do they make? Saponification. Oh my goodness, have we already forgotten those reactions from just a couple of weeks ago? So that's why it can't be used. Not just because there's a problem of acidity, but you're not even going to get the enolate because you're going to make the carboxylic acid salt. So, sodium hydroxide cannot be used to form enolates from esters because first of all, because hydroxide is not a strong enough base. Which, to just review one more time, water has a pKa of about 16, whereas an ester on average has a pKa of 24. So it won't deprotonate, or technically it could, because there's this phrase I keep using, if equilibrium can happen, it will happen. But since it's so unlikely to happen, what's more likely to happen is the tack at the carbonyl. And that's the second reason, that because it's not a strong enough base, and since saponification will occur. But we did see a base, wasn't it just yesterday, that is able to irreversibly deprotonate lots of things because, one, it's a very strong base, and two, it's sterically hindered. so less likely to attack carbonyls. What was that base? LDA. Now, I don't remember. Did we have the time even to see anything about the Claisen condensation yesterday? No. Okay, that's fine. So remember that the structure of LDA is a deprotonated amine with a pKa of 34, or depending on your textbook, 35. Means it doesn't want to be deprotonated, which since we force it to means it's a really strong base. Easily can deprotonate this compound, unlikely to attack the carbonyl. Because of the huge difference in acidity of the conjugates then, this is a forward reaction. Now, if this was the only compound in solution, though, the ester, and if not all of it reacts instantaneously with LDA, what do you think might happen? Because we know that this is a condensation we're talking about. Let me write another molecule of the ester up, because I'm implying that something's going to happen between the two of them. When we had an aldol condensation, the pure aldol condensation, didn't we have two of the same molecule reacting? And we first made the enolate out of one and had it react with the other, correct? That's exactly what's going to happen here. Enolate reforms, or the carbonyl reforms out of the one that was the enolate. Through the alpha position, we then have attack on the other carbonyl, which causes it to open up. Now, even I'm starting to get a little worried about, wait, how much do we really know if something's reversible or not? I know that that's an issue you all are kind of panicked about. But let's rationalize this. We're about to make an alkoxide. And that alkoxide is probably got a conjugate that's got a pKa of 16 to 18, something like that. We came from an enolate, the pKa of which, the conjugate of which, was 24. So it looks like we're going to be making a lot weaker base from a stronger one. And if so, that means that this step is irreversible. Now, this will confuse you a little bit, but I don't know why I do it this way. I've got this habit where I always put my esters on the right-hand side. I think just for ease of writing, I've gotten into that habit. So the enolate, I'm going to draw on the right-hand side of the product. And notice that once it reacts, that carbonyl reforms. So I'm going to end up with an ester. So that's this much of it over here. The other ester got attacked. And so we have an alkoxide. And then we have methoxide also attached. Plus there's the alkyl group of the ester that was attacked. So let's make sure. Four carbons total. Yeah, I did that correctly. Now we're in the same situation that we've seen before, somewhere in lab. Where, maybe we can see this situation. Because we have an alkoxide, but we also have methoxide that could be kicked off. Oh, we have seen something like this in saponification itself. So we can reform that carbonyl and kick off the methoxide. Which, notice, that means we end up with a product that has two carbonyls. When we saw the aldol condensation, which I'm going to review just after this, We ended up with a compound that only had one carbonyl, and we're going to see why in just a moment. This case, because we attacked an ester, we're able to retain that carbonyl at the end. And this is the way to recognize that you have a Claisen condensation instead of an aldol condensation. Because the product of a Claisen condensation is a beta keto ester. If you look at the positions, at the beta position relative to the ester, we have a ketone. So this is a beta keto ester with a new carbon-carbon bond at the alpha and beta positions. So let me briefly review the mechanism really quickly. We make the enolate, which we had the discussion before that about how hydroxide would be a poor choice. Even methoxide, which would avoid saponification, which would also avoid transesterification. Not a very strong base, so maybe it works, but it might take quite a bit of time to get it to work. But we use LDA, we cleanly make the enolate, which could react, start the process of condensation, we end up with this beta-keto ester. Now let's go back and look at the aldol condensation so we can see how this is really similar, but see the key difference in the form of product that you end up with. So let's take an aldehyde, which we can reversibly deprotonate with hydroxide. The problem with hydroxide above in the Claisen condensation is that it caused saponification. There is no such thing with an aldehyde. The worst thing that would happen if the aldehyde gets attacked by the hydroxide is you start to make a hydrate, which we already know that hydrates are not normally isolatable, so they just go back to the aldehyde anyways. And at some point, you can then progress on to the enolate. Exactly like the Claisen condensation we had up above, another molecule of that same starting material is now going to get attacked. And notice how this portion of the mechanism is therefore identical. We reform the carbonyl through the alpha position. We have attack of the other carbonyl, which opens up as response. The big difference is because the pKa's of the enolate and the alkoxide of their conjugates are similar, this one, unlike the top reaction, is more reversible. Which, I'm not going to write this part down because I don't think your textbook gets into this level of detail. But because the condensation of aldols are technically reversible, that means under the right conditions, you could take the product of an aldol condensation and cause it to break back apart into its original molecules. So to force the reaction, there's this device that's often used called a Soxhlet extractor, which I don't remember how to spell that name properly. I think it starts S-O-X, though, if you wanted to look it up online. And what it does is it has the base separated from the product. And it's kind of this cool system where the reaction chamber fills up and at some point it reaches the top and empties again. And it goes through the cycle. Every time it goes through the cycle, the product ends up getting removed. It's separated from the base, so it doesn't have a chance to reverse. So it's kind of a Le Chatelier's trick that's done. And that will help force you to get to the product. Again, because that I don't think that's discussed in your text at all. That's why I'm not writing it down. But for those of you who are interested, particular chem majors, you might want to go read up on it just because you might see it again in the future. Back to the main point here, though. We'll have the enolate attack the carbonyl like I did up above. Again, I don't know why I've got this habit of putting my reformed carbonyls on the right. Must have been taught that way. We have an intermediate where we have an alkoxide. But unlike the ester, that's all that's at that carbon. So there's no way that a carbonyl can reform at this point. In fact, if we go back up above here, let me label this appropriate point here, where we have the methoxide, in parentheses, I'm going to say leaving group. I put it in, not parentheses, quotes. Put it in quotes because, of course, if we were talking about SN1, SN2 reactions, we'd never call methoxide a leaving group. But it's because there's this similarity and basicity that it's able to be a leaving group. But now look at what we're doing with the aldol condensation. All we have at the same position as the negatively charged oxygen is a hydrogen and a carbon, neither one of which are leaving groups. And it's exactly because of that that we don't end up with two carbonyls. What happens instead? Well, you might recall that we can protonate this alkoxide, but also recall that since we have not yet, and we won't, switch to acidic conditions, we can't just say H+, so we have to deprotonate water or an alcohol, whatever solvent or conjugate of the base that you use that might be formed. If we use water, then this step is technically reversible. And this is one of the possible products that can be formed in an aldol condensation. But recall that under the right conditions, it doesn't stop here because we still have an alpha proton. Which means we could deprotonate again. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't write the mechanism for the first part of this. Okay, hold on. Let's fill in the mechanism for the top here. So alpha proton gets deprotonated, makes the enolate. Let's do the same thing right here. And then, here's the part that's unusual. That this carbonyl can reform by doing intramolecular elimination in what is known as the E1CB mechanism. And again, just to highlight, there's only one carbonyl that gets formed in this place, in this case. And so we could say that the product of an aldol condensation is either a beta hydroxy aldehyde or ketone, or an alpha beta unsaturated. Aldehyde or ketone. So when you review these mechanisms, you're going to see an awful lot that's similar. But because you have, in one case, an aldehyde and ketone, which doesn't have this quote-unquote leaving group, versus the ester, which does, that's why there's a difference in the product that forms. It is because of this grand similarity, though, that this is all conflated into a set of common chapters in your textbook. Questions about the Claisen or aldol condensations? Then just to do a bit of review, let's remind ourselves about the alpha alkylation reaction. So if we had an ester, we could react it with LDA. We make the enolate. Which the question came up after class yesterday. If we're going to do alkylation, why does it go in the carbon instead of the oxygen? Yes. Why? It's in our textbook? I missed it. What does it say? Okay, which is kind of what I had said, I think, at some point, but I wasn't sure that that was the right answer. One of the explanations we found, the people that did come to try to ask that question yesterday, was it had something to do with hard-soft interactions. You know, when we were talking about Michael additions yesterday, and we were talking about charge density, and that things of like charge density prefer to react, apparently an alkyl halide is a squishy substrate somehow. And for whatever reason, the carbon better interacts with that. But there was hardly a few sentences in the reference I could find that even talked about it. But it seems to match with this idea of carbon somehow being a better nucleophile. There's also my wondering that a carbonyl bond is probably thermodynamically more favorable than whatever product that results from a carbon-carbon double bond. So put all that together, and that's our hand-waving explanation why the carbon gets alkylated. Now, I'm not going to ask why is it the carbon that gets alkylated. I just want to point out there is this issue that this is technically a bidentate, to use that 1C term, bidentate ion. It could react from two different ends. But not worrying about that at the moment, let's go back to what can it do, which is alkylation. So if we throw an alkyl halide at this, and remember that needs to be a primary alkyl halide, we could put an R group on the alpha position of an ester. Yes? 838. Okay, I'll go back and look at that. Now, the reason I put this up, not just to remind us what the alkylation reaction is, but I want to bring up a consideration of how you would do this reaction. Because what is the difference between the first step of this reaction and the first step of the Claisen condensation? There is none. So how do we stop the Claisen condensation happening in this case? This is also buried in your textbook somewhere, and it has to do with the order of addition. If you add LDA to the ester a little bit at a time, then a little bit of enolate forms at any one time, but you've still got a whole container full of ester that's also around. So the enolate reacts with the ester and does the condensation. But if you add the ester to a container of LDA, well, that ester that gets added in rapidly gets converted into an enolate. And then that's all that's in solution. As long as there's maybe a little excess LDA, or maybe even if there's not, the acid-base reaction is most likely to be a lot quicker than condensation. So you add the ester in just a little at a time, you avoid it doing the condensation reaction because it just gets turned into an enolate. And an enolate will not react with another enolate normally, especially if you keep it at very low temperatures, which I think that's also maybe mentioned at some point. I'm not writing it down, but a lot of these enolate reactions are done at that negative 78 degree temperature to avoid self-condensation. So to avoid the Claisen condensation, we just are careful about how the reaction's conducted. And I'll say it this way, that clays and condensation can be avoided by adding the ester to a solution of LEA. This way, no significant quantity of the ester builds up for the enolate ion to react with. Now I have just one more condensation. No, I take that back. There is two. I remembered one other. But there's only one other condensation related to these top two that I want to show you, which is if we mix the two. Because think about this. If we do what I just said about forming an enolate from an ester, if we're careful about what's called order of addition, which way we add the reagents to each other, we could, in theory, take an ester, produce the enolate, do it in such a way where it doesn't react with itself, and then instead of letting it react with an ester, why not let it react with an aldehyde instead? What will happen? Well, you'll get a combination of the two reactions. You'll end up with an ester. Since you started with an ester as the enolate, you end up with the ester as an enolate. So in that way, it's different from an aldol condensation. But because it's an aldehyde being attacked, you only end up with one carbonyl. And in fact, you're going to end up with this alpha-beta unsaturated compound. And so that way, it's like an aldol condensation. The product will look like this. And maybe I would suggest you doing the mechanism as practice on your own. But if you do it, you'll see it really isn't that complicated. But I show you this because it does complicate your job if given a random product to then pull it back apart to figure out what could have produced it, which that's what we're going to start doing on Tuesday. So far I've been showing you here's how to do this reaction, here's how to do this reaction, here's the product you're going to get. If I give you a product, what would you use to get there? And that's what we'll start considering Tuesday, like I said. Any questions before we go to the last of the condensations for this morning? Then I want to show you one very, very related to Claisen. In fact, it is a Claisen reaction, but a subset. And this is one called the Diekmann condensation. Again, it's like a Claisen, but it's going to involve a diester. So again, if I wanted to make sure I cleanly make the enolate, I can use LDA. Which, because this is a symmetric compound, it doesn't matter which end of the ester I deal with. I'll start with the one on the right. Remove the alpha proton, form the enolate, form it irreversibly. Now, if we had nothing else in solution, in theory, one molecule of this could react with another molecule of the same kind. But if we had a reaction through that alpha position, and if it came back to attack the carbonyl, that would make a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 membered ring, which both 5-membered rings and 6-membered rings are favorable. Which, to bring up a point that I don't think I ever addressed, it's not just that it's thermodynamically favorable, or better put, it's not thermodynamically unfavorable. It also has to do with kinetics. Because imagine you want to make a 20-member ring. Probably not going to be any form of ring strain in that 20-member ring. But if you have 20 atoms separating the two ends of each other, then with that molecule constantly flopping around in solution, how are the two ends ever going to meet in order to make a ring? So making what are called macrocycles, large rings, is actually often a very, very tricky thing to do. But 5- and 6-membered rings aren't tricky, and that's exactly what's going to form in this case. To make sure that you can clearly see what product that we're going to form, I'm going to number my carbons. The reason I'm doing this is because when this reaction occurs, when the carbonyl reforms, that carbon's not in the ring. So again, although this is an intramolecular attack, which, to put this point in here also, intramolecular reactions are often faster than intermolecular reactions because you've only got one molecule involved. But otherwise, this is the same mechanism as a regular old Claisen condensation. Now let's make sure that, again, I draw this product correctly. So there's the carbonyl that gets reformed that, as I said, will not be part of the ring. We are going to make a 5-membered ring. Let me label those carbons. One, two, three, four, five, six. It was a position 6 that got attacked. So that's where we'll have the alkoxide as well as the methoxide. Just like in the Claisen condensation, carbonyl can reform. And we therefore end up with the same type of product in a Claisen. It's still a beta-ketoester. It just happens to be cyclic. Then I'd like to move to a different kind of alkylation, because we've actually seen two alkylations so far. I showed you the enamine route, which everybody practiced that mechanism, right? Because I had, I think I said yesterday that that would be a mechanism that I wouldn't mind discussing in class or suggested that we might discuss. So we're all ready to discuss that mechanism today, right? Because we've all read chapter 19 now, haven't we? That's what I thought. Okay. So, but instead of doing that, I want to show you this other alkylation because it's the last major piece of the chapter that we hadn't even touched on yet. And what I want to get to is the malonic ester synthesis. Which most typically involves the molecule diethylmalonate, which has this structure. Malonic ester is the common name for propane dionic ester. In other words, a dicarboxylic acid. Diethyl means put an ethyl group on each ester. So this is diethylmalonate. What is the pKa of that alpha proton? 13, that's right. Which means it's more acidic than water. Which means we can use hydroxide in this case to deprotonate. Because even though if you prolongly expose this to a concentrated excess solution of sodium hydroxide, if you just carefully add it in, titrate it, you could say, it is more acidic than water, and so that proton does come off easily. And since acid-base reactions are often faster than any other sorts of reactions, you could be fairly confident you won't cause any form of saponification. Because in fact, if you take an ester and just shake it around with a little hydroxide, normally, at room temperature, that's not enough to cause it to start saponifying. So I'll take hydroxide, deprotonate, even though the pKa difference is not huge, it is true that the hydroxide is a stronger base, so I'll go ahead and write this as a forward arrow. And now we could do the alkylation, but before we do that, let me write that note down about hydroxide before I do that. Okay. So, sodium hydroxide is an appropriate base in this case. Since the diester is more acidic than water, so neutralization is more likely than saponification. Now again, continuing on with the mechanism, this is a way to do an alkylation. So I'll show the carbonyl getting reformed. The SN2 reaction that would happen. And now we have an R group at the alpha position. What would happen if we did subject this to a concentrated solution of hydroxide, but didn't put any other reagents in? You would get saponification. And you might not yet realize, why would I do that? Because at first, all you'll get is the dye salt. What would now happen if you react this with acidic solution and maybe with just some gentle heating? And in fact, it doesn't really require a strongly acidic solution. Now, only if you read ahead would you have a good chance of figuring out what's going to happen. But before I tell you the answer, let me make a small aside. How many NMR signals would this compound generate? Two? Makes sense. You've got the alpha proton in the middle. The molecule is symmetric, so you have the two other alpha protons. But this actually has one, two, three, four, five absorbances. Why? Because this is not the only thing that exists in solution. Oh, nope. Ah. Could I have that white out? Remember, if equilibrium can happen, it will happen. And what if one of the carbonyls tautomerizes? Then you get intramolecular hydrogen bonding. That intramolecular hydrogen bonding is enough that it stabilizes this enol enough that a non-zero percentage of it will form in solution. Enough non-zero that you'll see it in NMR. And then if we have that enol, we have now two hydrogens on the alkene and the enol's hydrogen. So those are three peaks that otherwise you wouldn't expect to see. But because of this tautomerization and because of this unusually favorable tautomerization, you do see that. Now, why did I make this aside? Well, let's come back to the question of what would happen if we acidified the product of this malonic ester synthesis. We end up with a dicarboxylic acid in which you have the same potential for intramolecular hydrogen bonding. What if you didn't just have hydrogen bonding? What if the oxygen on the left-hand carbonyl reacted or interacted strongly enough with that hydrogen that it deprotonates the other carbonyl somehow? Which that bond would be in resonance or could kick open the other carbonyl, which that could then close again, which could kick out this carbon, because the bond would then come back over to kick open the carbonyl that would be positively charged because its oxygen had reached out to grab the hydrogen. This is a pericyclic reaction, which, no, we're not going to go back to the ground states and excited states and all that, and no molecular orbitals, just pointing out that this will easily occur. This happens anytime you have a beta acid-acid. It's two acids that are beta to each other. With a little bit of heat, you decarboxylate. This is decarboxylation. Let's look at what the products would be, because I know this could be a little daunting the first time you see it with all these arrows flying around. But recall, if you think this looks nasty, I got five letters for you, MCPBA. So if you can handle that, this is nothing, right? Look at the right-hand side of this mess that I just made. We have a bond that's coming around here to make a new carbonyl and kicking off this bond. Well, two carbonyls from the same carbon, that's carbon dioxide. That's what results in decarboxylation. Since that's a gas that bubbles out of solution, this is completely irreversible. What do you get on the other side? Well, we've opened up this carbonyl and protonated it, which means we end up with an OH group. And because this bond had swung around, we're going to end up with a double bond. So we end up with an enediol. Again, plus carbon dioxide that leaves as a gas. Of course, an enediol is just like an enol in that it's not isolatable. It's not thermodynamically favorable. We're already in acidic conditions, so that double bond easily can become protonated. Which means we generate a carbocation where either one of the oxygens could then undergo resonance. Reforming a carbonyl, which initially is protonated. And so our product is a carboxylic acid, but it's a custom carboxylic acid, you know, with good rims, some neon undercarriage, and a fancy paint job. Can't hear you.
That's coming from that where you have all the arrows going around in a circle. Oh, the parentheses is an up arrow. Up arrow, that's an old way of saying a gas has evolved. I'm old enough that we actually got taught that symbol.
So, the malonic ester synthesis. Is used to prepare custom carboxylic acids under relatively mild conditions. I say relatively because you do have to deesterify. Either through saponification or hydrolysis. That process means you're going to be heating in either some amount of base or acid for some period of time, which will cause some functional groups to decompose. But if you had something that was sensitive to strong bases, wouldn't be appropriate to have LDA around. You could avoid having to use LDA by using this approach. So it's a classic bit of organic synthesis. Questions on this? It probably doesn't look that scary, but it is one of those things you need to absorb.
No, they look at our top. Couple minutes, let me just squeeze it in real quick because it's so similar.
It's called the acetoacetate synthesis. It's identical except for the starting material. So in this case, we can use acetoacetic acid, or not the acid, the ester. Which, what would the pKa of this compound be, approximately? Which, what would be the pKa of this compound, approximately? 11. You see now why I wanted you to memorize all those pKa values? Because we actually are using them. Because it's 11, it's even more acidic than the diethylmalonate, which means sodium hydroxide even more easily deprotonates it, so we worry even less about saponification. We can end up with the enolate, which this time, I'll just go ahead and write the charge on the carbon itself, but let me ask you this. Of the two carbonyls, which one would be more involved in resonance? The left or the right one? Which carbonyl, if exposed to sodium borohydride, will actually get reduced? The answer is the same in both cases. The ketone is more reactive than the ester because the ester has the lone pair on the oxygen that can delocalize and therefore reduce the reactivity of that carbonyl. Also reduces the ability to tolerate the negative charge, so it's less likely to be in resonance. However, it is in resonance because that's why this has such a low pKa value. Just a little side story. React this with a primary alkyl halide or sulfonate, tosylate for example. Or I can't remember the structure now, but in trying to find the answer about O versus C alkylation, I came across, I think it was called a brosylate, which is parabromosulfonyl sulfonic acid or sulfonate. So there were some very amusing named compounds. Maybe I'll have to write some of those down for a future lecture. Trying to wrap up here, we've now alkylated. We can then, instead of saponifying, we could just hydrolyze to begin with. R, thank you. After we hydrolyze, we'll make an intermediate, a non-isolatable intermediate, that will not be a diacid this time because we only had a monoester. But we get the same type of intramolecular interaction, which means we're going to lose carbon dioxide. And decarboxylate. This time, because the portion that remains came from a ketone, we have a monoenol this time, which means it's going to tautomerize, and we end up with a customized acetone. So mechanism, everything's identical to the malonic ester synthesis. It's just we end up with a ketone instead of an acid. Any questions? Then try to enjoy some of this beautiful weather that we've got out there.